Welcome to Season 3, Episode 3 of The Innovation Muse, a podcast dedicated to educating and inspiring you to become a more powerful innovator. I am Ankush Chopra, your host. This season is titled Lessons from Management Research. In this season, we aim to bring some of the most interesting research on strategy and innovation and make it applicable for business managers. In this episode, we will discuss an interesting and powerful concept called dominant logic. It is the secret behind massive success of top management teams in driving their businesses. The dominant logic distills a massive amount of business wisdom in a very small set of logics. You will take away a few lessons in how to use this concept to make your business and organization more successful. Firms get disrupted because they fail to adapt to a changing world. This was the thesis of my book, A 60-Minute Guide to Disruption. I also discussed this line of thinking in some detail in the podcast season 1. But why is change so hard? One reason is that existing activity systems in a firm make it hard for it to change. Old plans, people, skills, brands, and everything that a firm does create a self-perpetuating mechanism that makes it hard to get out of. Why does Walmart not change itself and immediately become a massive online retailer like Amazon? The reason is that the existing stores, logistics systems, and all the activities that Walmart undertakes are geared towards a brick and mortar world. It is almost impossible for it to replace this infrastructure overnight. But there is another equally powerful reason why firms find it hard to change, and that is the cognitive rigidity of a firm. Cognitive structures determine the decision-making of business leaders. For example, the mutual fund industry has believed in providing significant value to investors through active fund management. When the index investing idea arose and took the investing world by a storm, most fund managers continued to believe that active management is better. In spite of significant empirical evidence on the superiority of indexing approach, fund managers refused to believe the data. Even a few months back, presenters at the fund management conference were reiterating how indexing peddles mediocrity. The bigger point here is that cognitive structures are critical drivers of what business leaders do and the decisions they take. Within the overall landscape of cognitive structures is the concept of dominant logic. It sums up the secret behind the success of a successful firm. This logic allows for effective responses by top management teams. But the same logic can become a major rigidity that prevents a firm from adapting to a much needed change. Let's explore the management science literature to understand this concept and how you can use it to become a more successful business manager. Dominant logic is a mindset or a worldview of the business and the administrative tools to accomplish goals and make decisions in that business. Now, worldview is nothing but a mental model of the world. For example, when Kodak managers used to look at their business, they used to see consumables as the drivers of profits. Of course, Kodak made money in many different ways, but the most critical driver was film and photo finishing consumables. Similarly, when you look at the business of Netflix, you know that the total subscribers, subscriber acquisition cost, and the churn rate of subscribers are the three drivers of its overall profits. These models become a worldview. Such models allow managers to manage business without getting overwhelmed by all the complexity and details of the situation. A set of critical models of the business and the world becomes a cognitive map for a manager. Such a map allows the business leaders to navigate the complex and an ever-changing world. Associated with such a map is a learned problem-solving behavior. For example, a Netflix business leader would solve the problem of declining profits by quickly honing in on the key drivers of profits. He would have the heuristics for adding subscribers, for example. I had shared a similar story with you in the first episode of season 2. There I had explained how William Bratton's cognitive map of the criminal world included drugs, guns, and prior convictions as the drivers of major crimes. When the mental models and the learned problem-solving behavior is shared among the top management team, it becomes the dominant logic of the firm. Such a shared cognitive map allows a team to interact effectively and make great decisions fast. A critical paper on dominant logic by Prahlad and Bettis explained how this dominant logic evolves over time. They explained that it emerges due to two reasons. First is the market success of a firm. When you succeed in the market, that success reinforces the belief that your worldview is right. When you buy a new house, for example, you initially do not know which light switches turn on which lights. But very soon, your success in turning on different lights using different switches help you build a mental map of the electrical circuits in that new house. Similarly, when you succeed in the market, your cognitive map is reinforced. The other piece of dominant logic evolves with the evolution of a very complex problem-solving behavior. It involves cognitive simplifications and pattern recognition. Now, I have spoken about this in the prior episodes too. Our mind doesn't work like a computer that makes decisions by calculating every option and giving the best answer. That would take too much energy, and we as a species are geared towards conserving energy. A great example of this is when you get dressed in the morning. You really do not consider all the possible combinations of clothes you can wear. Instead, you choose between a small set of possible combinations that you have gravitated towards in the past. So you see, you have these simplified models of the world that you bring to your attention every day. You also use schemas, which are units of cognition. Such schemas contain a massive amount of information in a condensed form and allows you to make quick decisions in somewhat complex situations. These schemas allow us to possess significant tacit knowledge. It is such knowledge that we possess, but we cannot articulate. And this allows us to use a thin slice of information to make sense of a situation and make important decisions fairly quickly. Let me share an example of thin slicing in the next segment. In the last segment, I discussed how mental models allow us to use pattern matching to make decisions. At the same time, we also use mental schemas to access massive amounts of information about a situation without processing all that information. This allows us to use a very small amount of information to make sense of the entire world. Let me share a personal example of thin slicing. A long time back, I was the program manager for SAP implementation for P&G Asia. That was a massive organizational transformation project that transformed P&G from a country-based organization to a globally run company. It involved standardization of thousands of processes across all the countries in Asia. Once my team standardized the process, embedded it into the SAP system, it would then train the operations team who would move on to run the operations with all those processes. One of the critical processes of the organization was accounts payables. It involved paying money to suppliers on time and as per prior agreement. Now, after 100 or 120 days of our pilot, which was done for a couple of countries, the Asia leader for operations told me that there was something wrong with the payables process. As a result, many suppliers were not being paid and some of them were threatening to stop the suppliers. Now, he had tried to talk to various people in operations and in my project team to find out what could be the root cause of that problem, but he wasn't able to get to the bottom of the situation. Since I was really busy with the next set of countries, he called me in as the last resort. So he told me that the payables operations manager told him that they were processing thousands of invoices within the service level agreement. And if I recall correctly, the service level agreement was something like 97% of invoices paid on time. Now, the operations manager basically said that since they were meeting their goals, something must not be okay with the project team. The project team members were saying that the process works pretty well and the operations must not be doing their work. So, what I did next was to ask the operations folks, where are the people who were doing this accounts payable work? Then, I walked to the payables process room and I walked around in that room for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and then I stopped to ask one of the processors 2 questions. After that, I walked out. When I walked out, I knew exactly why the problem existed. But you know, telling people what was the root cause would not have helped at that time at all. So I asked someone in my team to pull a report from the system. That report showed exactly where the problem lay. The issue was that when an invoice had a problem, there was no exceptional handling process. So the exceptions were being generated and no one was looking at those invoices. Now, the amazing thing here is not that I solved a problem that no one else was able to figure out, including the folks who designed the process. The amazing thing is that it took me a couple of minutes to figure out this very difficult situation, and I did it by using very little information. I didn't run many reports to identify the cause that may be leading to this issue. I knew the answer and then ran a report that confirmed the problem. In fact, the report didn't even exist in the system. So someone had to generate the data and then show it as a report. So how did I do that? The reason is thin slicing of information. Now you see, when I entered the scene, I brought with me a set of mental models. In my mind, every process is a closed system, and there are a few places where the bottlenecks can exist. And I had built that mindset over many, many years. When I walked to the process room, I had only 2 questions in my mind. Number one, are all the invoices reaching the processors? And number two, are processors processing 100% of them? So my first question to the processor told me that 100% of invoices were indeed reaching them. And the second answer told me that no one is looking at the problem invoices. The invoices that were somewhat not okay were being thrown out of the process. They lay there day after day without anyone taking care of them. I didn't have to go through a million things that could have gone wrong in that extremely complex process. I didn't have to know which people were doing the right job and which were not. I did not need to know what different kinds of invoices existed or even how a purchase order is entered into the system. This is how thin slicing of information allows you to make sense within a complex situation in a short time. Now, consider how top management teams possess many such mental models which create a cognitive map. Within this map exists a dominant logic that tells you what is the right way of looking at the business and taking decisions. Over time, it not only evolves, but is also reinforced through market success. And this is how dominant logic takes root. So the next question is, how can you use this knowledge of dominant logic to become a more effective manager and a business leader? Let's find out in the next segment. We saw in the last segment that a shared mental model and a set of learned problem-solving behaviors, when shared by a top management team, becomes the dominant logic of the firm. Such a logic allows firms to make fast and effective decisions that lead to market success. This is a powerful concept because it can help you drive your business much more effectively. If your team does not share a dominant logic, you may be wasting a lot of time in reinventing the wheel. You may actually be like a football team where half the people think the touchdown line is on one end of the field while the other half thinks it is on the other end of the field. So, one way to use this concept is to try to articulate your dominant logic. Second is to assess whether the entire team shares this logic. An equally powerful use of this concept would also be in managing a large-scale change. We are in the age of disruption today where old cognitive maps are rapidly becoming obsolete. Even if the entire map doesn't become obsolete, parts of your cognitive map needs replacement. Now, I remember many years back, I was using a Garmin GPS system when going from Boston to Maryland. I had all of East Coast map in that system, but I missed downloading the Delaware map. So I had a great ride all along until I reached Delaware. At that time, I was driving blind and the GPS could no longer guide me. That is an example of a hole in a map. Now imagine if a part of your map becomes incorrect, you definitely won't be able to reach your destination. So, when your firm is going through a disruptive event, your old cognitive maps can be the key reason why your businesses may get disrupted. Now, when Kodak was going through the digital transition, middle managers in the company didn't believe in the digital future. Since their map was so firmly telling them that the only way to make money is through film, they just couldn't figure out how they would survive and make money in a filmless world. This was large part of the reason why Kodak couldn't move fast in the market in spite of having the right technology. Now consider what's happening to Gillette today. It has had a dominant logic of upselling to consumers. They build better and better blades and move their customers to the new product, which is much more profitable than the previous blade. By focusing on technology and branding, they continue to grow their profits year after year. It worked so well that Gillette garnered a dominant market position, and this dominant logic took hold of the organization. But unknown to Gillette, the tectonic plates of its world were shifting. Many consumers were not finding enough value in moving up the technology ladder and buying the newer kinds of blades. Marketing was moving from the dominant media mix of the past world to an online advertising world. And the internet was eliminating the distribution access barrier. And suddenly, an upstart like Dollar Shave Club came on the scene and within a matter of 3 to 4 years, captured 8% of the blades market. It brought a cheaper blade and a message that it was stupid to pay for things you don't need. In a way, it was telling people that a lot of Gillette innovation was wasteful for them. With a viral video and a subscription service, it was able to succeed very quickly. Recently, Unilever acquired Dollar Shave Club, and now Gillette is dealing with a well-matched competitor in a market that it dominated for decades. The problem Gillette would face is that its dominant logic would not serve it well when competing with Unilever. Its logic would tell it to improve the blades and do a better job in marketing. Even if some people in the firm believe in going down market and competing with upstarts like Dollar Shave Club, a lot of other people would rely on the old dominant logic. Here is another example from the history of business. Many years back, Sony was the undisputed leader of consumer electronics. It had the best hardware because the dominant logic of the firm was all about hardware and how to make a great hardware. But the world changed and software became a critical part of the consumer electronics world. At that stage, Sony had a tough time adapting its dominant logic. I have given the citation of a great article from Wall Street Journal that details the story of Sony. If you'd like to read it, you can use that citation. In short, the dominant logic can be the driver of success of a firm, but can also become the barrier that eventually leads a firm to disruption. Let's quickly go through some actionable lessons from this episode in the next segment. Stepping back, the key actionable lessons from this episode on dominant logic are as follows. Number one, now that you understand the concept of dominant logic, try to articulate the dominant logic in your business. Is it well known within the top management team? You may want to ask some of the business leaders within your team to articulate the dominant logic and assess if it is the same across people. Number two, how well does your dominant logic get transmitted to new members of the leadership teams? Do you have a process by which you promote people who share the dominant logic? Or do you have a process of transmitting the dominant logic? You can ensure that your succession planning includes ways to transmit and propagate the dominant logic of the firm. Number three, while you re-examine and renew your strategy every year, do you reassess the validity of your dominant logic at regular intervals? Perhaps you can start including a process of assessing the validity of your existing dominant logic in a changing world. Fourth, when you move to a new company, you can assess whether the old dominant logic that you bring with you is entirely applicable in the new situation. There is not an easy way to answer this question except through deeper reflection and self-understanding. So this was all that I had for you in this episode of this podcast. I will see you next week with another episode. Bye till then.